Dr. Nathaniel Cogley. He is, I think he's, is he on the air? Is he on the phone with us? Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Brad and Gary. How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm good, and of course I'm in Texas now, but I lived in Connecticut for 6 years going to Yale Graduate School, so pleasure to be with you.
Well, welcome back to Connecticut, even if it's just on a temporary basis.
Now, where do you live in Texas?
So I'm at Tarleton State University. This is in Stephenville, Texas, hour and a half southwest of Fort Worth, and we have a beautiful campus down here and some good programs.
Nice.
That's fabulous.
Always wanted to visit. Texas really is a world in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, second most populous state, and it's a state with a lot of cultural identity, and it's very proud of its culture. So it's fun to live here, but I enjoyed living in Connecticut, too. You guys were fun.
Well, a little pricey to be here. I think Texas has a... both states have its has its assets. So talk to me about Bernie Sanders. He took a swipe on Monday at the his 2020 rival, Senator Kamala Harris, going after his fellow senator for criticizing his Medicare for All plan. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, so he's just taking a swipe at her. She did some high fundraising in the Hamptons. So half of this is just Bernie's brand. You know, he's been going against the 1% for a long time. And he's in a special position. He can raise big money without doing those types of things. In fact, he's raised more money than anyone else. So half of this is just his brand. But I think the other half is he's a little bitter. So when he announced his Medicare for All program, Kamala Harris was there, and she initially endorsed it back in April. Uh-huh. And she's pulled back a little bit. So now she's trying to position herself as kind of satisfying both the centrist and left wings of the party. So she supports Medicare for All as a goal, but it's going to take 10 years, and we won't do it with private insurance. There'll be a role for them. Uh-huh. They'll be able to offer Medicare plans. So she's got this kind of confusing middle ground. And so on some level, Bernie's kind of authenticity and passion and consistency is admirable. But even though he's double her in the polls, I'd rather be her. So she's going to the Hamptons, and she's got a confusing position. But that makes her more electable, actually. Yeah. She's positioned herself maybe to be the nominee and to actually have a shot at the presidency, where Bernie, I don't think he's the next president.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking, and I have been thinking this for the last, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, Bernie Sanders' star has kind of fallen a bit since the 2016 election.
Yeah.
How does he account for that? Why is he not as popular this time around as he was 4 years ago?
Yeah, 4 years ago, the Hillary machine really intimidated a lot of ambitious Democrats. So there was a double vacuum there. There was vacuum of someone championing left-wing redistributive policies.
Yeah.
He filled that. And there was also a vacuum of someone to challenge the front runner, and he did that too. And people went from, he wasn't a national figure, and he became one by putting up a viable competition. But this cycle's the opposite. I mean, and there's, you know, 20-plus ambitious Democrats, and there's less vacuum for him to fill. And so you have a lot of other people advocating for, you know, redistributive policies. There's plenty of people challenging. So there's just not vacuums for him to fill. And he's also older. I mean, if he was elected, he'd set the record for oldest person elected president by 6 years.
Wow.
So I'm just not optimistic. It's kind of admirable that he's been able to have an impact on some level, but I'm not optimistic that his campaign is viable.
Doctor, you know, you have a terrific reputation, and I just wanted to ask you the question about the president himself. He's all over the place, I know that, but you think he's got a good shot to win again or not?
Well, I put him at a 2-to-1 favorite, and of course the matchup's going to be very important. So who's attractive to the 40 million Democrats that will participate in their primary might not be the person who's attractive to the 140 million Americans who will vote in the general election. So the Democrats need to be mindful about who they pick. I think there's a lot of matchups Trump would defeat easily, but of course they only need one nominee. So I think of the people who have announced, Governor Bullock out of Montana is probably their best matchup. And I do see him having a path through Iowa, a state similar to Montana. And he's positioned himself as someone with governing experience. But he's at 1%. He's a long way from being the nominee. Kamala Harris would have a shot, but you know, a Warren, a Sanders, I'm not even big on Biden. That'd be good for Trump's reelection chances.
Oh, it would be very good for Trump's reelection. But it's interesting that you say that you're not big on Biden, when, because most politicos I talk to have all but written everybody else off, and really the contest is now for vice president, with the presumption that Joe Biden is going to have a cakewalk to get the Democrat nod.
Yeah, way too early for that. So we've seen Biden run for president before. It always ends at 1% in Iowa, and he drops out. And I've never seen him run a viable campaign. He's making a lot of gaffes. He has this great national recognition, being a two-term vice president. But he didn't become vice president because he really challenged Obama for the nomination through successful campaigning. Obama could have picked lots of people. And I'm just not sure that that how he's registering the polls is really going to resonate through this process. It goes through Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. And I'm expecting there's a lot of hot air in there. And I'm just not thinking he's going to – he has a better chance of being the nominee than the president. But, yeah, I'm not big on his campaign. One point I'll make that I think is very interesting is all this kind of policy debate about legislation that the president will pass. I'm not predicting that the next president is going to have a Congress of their own party. So right now we have a divided Congress. You know, Democrats have the House, Republicans have the Senate. That's going to hold. So it's not going to be like Obama, who had 2 years of a Democratic Congress, and Trump, who had 2 years of a Republican Congress. Either Trump in his second term or a Democratic president in their first term is going to have a divided Congress. So all this idea about, you know, the party policies that they'd like to get through Congress and sign, none of that's happening. So it's kind of very interesting that that becomes the wedge issue in the primary, where that's not going to actually be how they govern.
So you're saying the Congress will remain the status quo, that the Republicans are going to retain the majority in the Senate, and the Dems will retain the majority in the House. What leads you to that, though? What's your train of thought behind that?
So presidents usually lose houses. They don't gain houses. And for a president to gain a house, you have to go back to 1948 and Truman. So I know that Trump is ambitious, and he'd like for the Republicans to gain the House and him to win re-election. But that's very unlikely. It's likely that Democrats keep the House. And if you look at the Senate, of course, only a third of the senators are up for election every 2 years. And so just looking at that map, right now the Republicans have a 53-47 advantage. And I can predict on the states that the Democrats are likely to gain 2 seats. So the Republicans are likely to have 51 control in the Senate going into this cycle. So we'll have a divided Congress going into the next 2 years, regardless of who's president. Now, going forward in the third and fourth year of that presidency, that's going to be a midterm year where opposition does well. So whoever's president, the opposing party will do well in the midterm years, thus blocking somewhat a party having control of Congress and the presidency.
You know, Doctor, you sound right on the money on this morning. And again, when I asked you about the president, and you made your statement, what's amazing to me about the president is everywhere that he goes, he's got people like other people don't have. I mean, they just jam in, and they come in a day or two ahead of time. What do you think is the cause of that?
Well, he's been doing that since 2016, huge rallies and a huge support base. And I think what's interesting there, I clearly don't think there's going to be a viable opposition to him for the Republican nomination. He has big support within the Republican Party. And this is going to really set him up to run for the general, spend a long time on that general campaign, whereas the Democratic people are fighting over the party nomination, not positioning themselves for the general. You know, Trump has really changed the Republican Party. That was very divisive. You know, he took out Jeb Bush, and he took out other types of Republicans, and he really changed the dialogue on immigration and on foreign policy, and he's questioned trade deals that both parties were endorsing. You know, it wasn't since Ross Perot that we questioned NAFTA. So he's really changed the policy discussions within the Republican Party. He's been very nationalistic and patriotic in his messaging, And he's inspired a lot of people. And, of course, there's opposition, too. I mean, he's a pretty polarizing figure. But he certainly has a passionate base.
Yeah, and you know what's kind of interesting, before we let you go, is I was just even a couple of years ago, there was speculation that there would be a challenge, a primary, within his own party. And there was rumors of John Kasich coming forward again and Jeb Bush. You just mentioned Jeb Bush. There was rumors of him and maybe even one or two others. But, you know, now that we're, you know, in late August of 2019, I don't foresee any challenge for a primary against Trump.
Well, it's state by state, but so someone will get their name on the ballot, but he'll crush it. He's going to cruise towards a renomination here. But the general election, you know, the matchup's important, and it's not a guaranteed lock that he wins a reelection. But I don't envision anyone competing for the Republican nomination this cycle.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nathaniel Coghlan.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time with us this morning.
I enjoyed it, guys. Thanks.